In the book of Romans, in the first chapter, as we read at the beginning of our worship this morning, the whole section that starts there, but I'd like to call your attention again just simply to the 32nd verse, which is the conclusion of the whole list of things that he categorizes on the part of those who are Gentiles, who had departed from God, who would not retain God in their knowledge, and gave God up. And so it says God gave them up to a reprobate mind to do all of these things. And after listing that almost exhaustive group of sins, he finishes by saying, "Who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." And that's the New King James reading. Another translation says something like, "Who give hearty approval to those who practice such things." Now what he means by that is that you have some who practice those sins, and there are others who may not practice them, but they heartily endorse them. They may not be disobedient to parents. They may not be hateful and spiteful and implacable and untrustworthy and all the things he lists here. But if they don't do all of those things, he says that they heartily approve. They endorse those who practice such things. And I would say to you that by forming that in that fashion and structure, that Paul is also saying that not only is it wrong to practice those things, and those things are terrible in the sight of God, but it is also wrong for us to lend endorsement, to say, it's okay for you to do that. Or to say, it's not bad, it's not wrong for you to practice those things. Or maybe even to be indifferent to them. And say, okay, so you live that way. No skin off my nose if you want to do that. That's all right, just go ahead and do what you want to do. But I'm not going to expose myself to your wrath, and I'm not going to stand up and oppose people who practice those things. Well, that's a kind of a silent endorsement. They may not practice those things, Paul says, but they certainly approve of them by virtue of endorsement. And that is also wrong. This morning and tonight, I'm going to address you on the subject of the difficulty that we're facing in the problem of homosexuality. And I do that because it is growing in such magnitude that our children are being faced with it on every circumstance, and it's going to get worse all the time. But more than that there are people who are saying it's all right to do that. And there are some people who claim to be Christians who say the Bible doesn't say that's a sin. And that might just blow your mind. You might say, how in the world can people read the Bible and then say the Bible doesn't say it's wrong? Well, they do. And so we're going to be examining some of those things this morning. If you think this is not a problem, let me acquaint you with some things. In a survey conducted among high school students, 54% of the students who were polled said they have no problem with homosexuality. They may not do it, but they don't see a problem with it. And what's more, the teenage years and people are getting more promiscuous all the time, and it is becoming the in thing to experiment with homosexuality. And they're being told it's all right, it's okay, and kids don't find a problem with that. In the state of Hawaii, they are on the verge of passing a law legalizing homosexual marriage. Vermont has already passed a law legalizing what they call gay unions. They do not call them marriages. But they're legalized in that they have the same legal rights of people who are married. All the benefits, all the legal benefits. In Florida, a law has been passed which legalizes gay couples to have foster children. Now, from that, you would say, it certainly is going to grow, and that more and more states who begin to endorse this, and beyond endorsement, who begin to pass laws and say, it's all right, it's legal, we accept it, we recognize it, it's not going to get better. And so we are certainly faced with a magnitude of a problem. realistically, I would say to you that we have lost the battle. I would say to you that whatever struggle we may have struggled in involving in opposition to homosexuality, we have lost the battle. Now, that's just being realistic. I would like to say it's different, but I can't. And I say that because regardless of whatever opposition may have been offered to homosexuality, that it is growing in such great proportions in acceptability that there's nothing now that you and I can do about changing. I don't know, when you look back at history, if there was anything that we could do to change. Maybe we ought to have been more vocal. Maybe we ought to have approached the subject differently. Maybe we ought to have been more aggressive in fighting against it. I don't know. But I'm just simply saying that looking at it now, we've lost that battle. And your children and our grandchildren are going to grow up in an environment where this is acceptable behavior. And they're going to have to deal with it. They're going to have to live with it. And there's not much that can be done about that. The time will come, and it may be very short, in which we will not be allowed to say what I'm going to say to you this morning without being condemned, castigated, and perhaps even having some legal repercussions. And if that time comes, I hope that your faith in God and God's standard of morality is such that you will say, okay, you do what you want to do, but this is what the Bible says. And we will stand opposed to this immoral behavior as we stand opposed to all moral behavior. And we will not compromise. Now, what I'm going to talk to you this morning about and this evening is not about the atheists and infidels and agnostics and skeptics of the Bible. These are not the ones who are the focus of our attention in this study. But the source of the information and arguments and endorsement that comes from what is called mainstream churches, mainstream denominations. Just a few years ago, the Presbyterian Church passed laws approving of homosexual marriages and also accepting in their clergy people who were homosexuals. There's a man named William Stanton who is a Baptist. I don't know that the Baptist will endorse him or say, well, really, we accept him as being a Baptist, but he is a teacher at LaSalle University. And when addressing the subject of homosexuality, he said, homosexuality absolutely is not a sin. Absolutely, it is not a sin. Now, from mainstream denominations, even down to people who are supposedly conservative in their views of the Bible, I want to bring this a little closer to home. There is a group among some more liberal churches of Christ known as the Acapella Chorus. Now, they don't mean by that that that's a singing group. That's not why they're named that. Nor is this a group that is a kind of self-help encouragement for those who are struggling with homosexuality and would like some help, some answers to get out of it. But it is a group that was formed first in 1979 in Houston. And it was formed among supposedly members of Churches of Christ. And it was formed especially for the reason of the promoting of gays' rights among Churches of Christ and acceptability among Churches of Christ. They claim to be people who have been saved from their sins, who have been baptized scripturally, and who worship God according to the pattern of the New Testament scriptures. Do you know why they adopted the name Acapella? Because it identifies the historical Churches of Christ who are opposed to instrumental music. Now, I want you think about that. Just kind of mull that over your minds for a moment. Here is a group that says, we understand the principles by which you establish authority in saying that instrumental music is wrong in worship to God, but who in turn say the Bible does not condemn homosexuality. Now, that's beyond my imagination. I don't understand how a person can understand the principles of interpretation and say instrumental music is wrong and homosexuality is right. But that's why they name themselves, because that identifies them with the churches of Christ that are opposed to instrumental music. They are very adamant in saying the Bible does not condemn homosexuality. In fact, the passages that you would normally use and to which you would refer, they say that's not what we practice in homosexuality. This is the world that you and I live in. And again, I say to you, then looking back over the past 20 years and where things have developed and where they've come to now, that if we project in the same way to the next 20 years, it's not going to get any better. And we need to understand why these people are taking this position, what they're saying, and the arguments they make in trying to defend their practice. How in the world can people say the Bible does not condemn homosexuality? Well, to you and to me, it seems quite clear. But to people who will look at passages in order to justify their practice, there are ways of twisting and perverting and slanting and explaining that offer some semblance of reason and defense. I'm saying this for two reasons. First of all, you need to understand the arguments that are made so that you may defend the Scriptures against the proponents of homosexuality. That is, those who are practicing it, who say it's right, this is our way of life, we're not going to change. And second of all, so that in understanding better what's taking place and the arguments that are being made, that you may be equipped to help those who may be struggling with the subject of homosexuality. They're not practicing it, but they may not understand it. And more people in our world, I think, are being affected by that second part. Well, let's just examine some passages. Turning back to the Old Testament first, and we'll look at Leviticus, the 18th chapter, and in verse 22. You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. To us, that seems quite clear. And to the nation of Israel, I would say that was quite understandable. Then if you'll turn to the 20th chapter and look at verse 13.